masks are required, and seating for this event will be socially distanced and limited. Tickets are $30 to $50. Students are $17. For tickets, visit mosc.org or call 800-514-3849 or stop by the Wagner Noel box office.
Now airing on the Noon Book Hour, A Man Called Ove by Frederick Backman. Ove is a curmudgeon, the kind of man who points at people he dislikes as if they were burglars caught outside his bedroom window. He has staunch principles, strict routines, and a short fuse. People call him the bitter neighbor from hell. But must Ove be bitter just because he doesn't walk around with a smile plastered to his face all the time? Behind the cranky exterior, there is a story and a sadness. So when one November morning, a chatty young couple with two chatty young daughters move in next door and accidentally flatten Ove's mailbox, it is the lead-in to a comical and heartwarming tale of unkempt cats, unexpected friendship, and the ancient art of backing up a U-Haul, all of which will change one cranky old man and a local residents' association to their very foundations. Frederick Backman's novel about the angry old man next door is a thoughtful exploration of the profound impact one life has on countless others. A Man Called Ove, weekdays at noon and 2 a.m. on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 43 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 10 a.m.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments. Welcome. This is Independent Living, and I'm your reader, Leslie, with the Audio Reading Service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today, I'll be reading from several health newsletters. The first one is from the Health and Nutrition Letter from Tufts University. And the first article, Easy Steps to a Healthier New Year. This is the time of year we make big promises to ourselves. I will lose weight, start exercising, eat healthier, etc. But creating lasting behavior change is tough. Even if your end goal is big, research shows that baby steps are more likely to lead to sustainable, manageable, long-lasting behavior change that gets you the results you want. Here are some simple, science-backed, small ways to make a big impact on your health. The first one, fit in fiber. One change that will have a major positive impact on your entire dietary pattern is replacing low-fiber foods on your plate with naturally fiber-rich choices. Dietary fiber is naturally found in vegetables, fruits, whole grains, beans, and nuts, plant foods that also provide vitamins, minerals, and healthful phytochemicals. A fiber-rich diet is associated with lower risk of diabetes, heart disease, and colorectal cancer, as well as a lower risk of dying from all causes, including heart attack and stroke. The average U.S. adult gets about 15 grams of dietary fiber a day, lower than the recommended 20 grams for women and 30 grams for men. Aim to eat a variety of naturally fiber-rich foods throughout the day. Small change suggestions. Put more colorful fruits and vegetables on your plate while cutting back on white bread and refined starch sides. Choose whole grains and whole grain foods over refined. Snack on nuts or fruit instead of pretzels or potato chips if hunger strikes between meals, and add beans and lentils to soups, salads, and side dishes. The next way to impact your health, skip sugary drinks. If you can't start your day without that sugar-laden large vanilla mocha coffee confection, or you regularly drink soda, sports, or energy drinks, or sweetened iced tea, weaning yourself off these sugary drinks will be key to your health and weight loss resolutions. Intake of added sugars in drinks promotes weight gain and is linked to type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and gout, not to mention cavities. So here's a small change suggestion. Make a plan to cut back. Start by replacing one sweet drink a day with an unsweetened beverage. Water, seltzer, unsweetened coffee or tea, or unsweetened milk, soy, or nut drinks are the best choices. When you have adjusted to that change, cut back even further. For a pop of flavor or fizz, try a squeeze of citrus in plain water, or combine sparkling water or seltzer with a splash of 100% fruit juice. Skip the syrups and whipped cream and boost coffee and tea with plain milk or unsweetened milk alternatives such as nut milks, which are naturally sweet tasting, or a dash of cinnamon. Note, diet drinks and sugar substitutes can help you cut your intake of added sugars, but they will not help you tamp down your preference for sweets. So think of these as a bridge toward getting off sugary drinks, not a destination. The next way to help your health this year, get moving. Being active is associated with lower risk of chronic disease, as well as stronger bones and muscles, better brain health, boosted mood, improved ability to do daily activities, and higher quality of life. Physical activity by itself does not help much with weight loss. Changing your diet is necessary for that. But activity is helpful for maintaining weight loss, and resistance exercise builds muscle mass. No matter your age, shape, size, or physical abilities, everyone can experience health benefits from moving more. And here's a small change suggestion. Evidence shows that physical activity can be broken into increments as short as 10 minutes throughout the day and still be beneficial. Even everyday activities such as standing, walking, or household chores count. The next way to help your health this year, swap carbs. Americans eat way too many refined carbohydrates, refined grains, starches, and sugars. Eating refined grains like white flour and products made from it is associated with many negative health effects. A diet rich in minimally processed whole grains, such as oats, barley, quinoa, bulgur, buckwheat, wheat berries, and many more, and products made from them, such as whole wheat breads, steel-cut oats, and high-fiber cereals, for example, is associated with better long-term health. Strive to make at least half the grains you eat whole grains. Use the nutrition labels, facts label, to identify products with at least 1 gram of fiber for every 10 grams of carbohydrate per serving when buying packaged foods. And here's the small change suggestion. Swap in whole grain bread or crackers for white, cook whole grains like quinoa or barley instead of rice sides, and choose plain popcorn or nuts instead of pretzels and chips. Replacing refined carbs with naturally low-carb foods is even better. Instead of cereal, enjoy a bowl of yogurt with fruits and nuts. Instead of rice or bread, have a side of veggies or beans. The start of a new year is a good time, and actually any time is a good time, to take a good look at your irregular habits and behaviors and focus on taking steps toward permanent, healthy changes. And to review, here's the Take Charge box. To achieve your health goals in the new year, use these well-established methods for successful behavior change. The first one, set specific, realistic, short-term goals. For example, choose one specific food or activity to increase or decrease by a specific amount within a certain time period, then build on that with other similar goals. Number two, track your progress. A written diary or mobile app are good options. Number three, engage family and friends. Rely on people who can provide support, encouragement, and accountability. And number four, get regular feedback. Healthcare providers, family members, friends, or an app can all be helpful in reviewing your progress and telling you how you're doing. This next section in this newsletter is the News Bites. And the first little article, More Science That Chocolate May Be Good for Your Health. A new systematic review and analysis of studies suggests that chocolate may benefit heart health. Published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, this research combined and analyzed the results of 6 observational studies conducted in the United States, Sweden, and Australia. Consuming chocolate at least once a week was associated with a lower risk of coronary artery disease, which is the narrowing or blockage of the arteries around the heart due to a buildup of plaque. This study does not establish cause and effect or indicate how much chocolate or what kind is related to a potential health benefit, but previous research suggests consuming a small amount of dark chocolate, which is 70% cocoa or higher, The authors caution that the sugars and fats in commercial chocolate products can have detrimental health effects, so candy bars, brownies, and chocolate cake don't count. Several bioactive compounds found in cocoa, including flavanols and polyphenols, are suggested as potential contributors to possible benefits. Some of these compounds are also found in various other foods like fruits, nuts, and teas. If you love chocolate, a square or two of dark chocolate once a week as a substitute for sugared candy or other desserts is likely safe and may even prove to confer some health benefits. And this next little news bite, intermittent fasting does not lead to more weight loss. Participants in a new randomized clinical trial lost about the same amount of weight and hence had similar cardiometabolic benefits whether they practiced intermittent fasting, which is a time-restricted eating, or ate three meals per day. One group of the overweight and obese patients were told to eat three meals a day plus snacks if desired. Another group could eat whatever they wanted between the hours of noon and 8 p.m. with no caloric intake for the rest of the 24-hour day, 8 hours to eat and 16 hours of fasting. The study did not include calorie restriction for either group. After 12 weeks, there was no significant difference in weight change between groups, and the group randomized to intermittent fasting actually experienced a significant loss of lean muscle mass, an unexpected and potentially harmful result. The authors had hypothesized that the fasting schedule would lead to lower calorie intakes and hence weight loss, but the results did not support that hypothesis. Some other studies have found intermittent fasting to be as effective for weight loss as other weight loss diets. However, these studies have been relatively short-term. For now, no strong evidence supports intermittent fasting regimens compared to three healthy meals per day as a more effective way to lose weight. This next article is called Using Restaurant Calorie Labels for Better Health. Chain restaurants are now required to provide calorie content. The rest is up to you. Whether you sit down, drive through, take out, or pick up, you should see calorie information on the menus of all chain restaurants with 20 or more locations. Even prepared foods at your supermarket or coffee shop chain and popcorn at that big-name movie theater may need to be tagged with calorie content on the menus. This law was designated to help consumers make better choices to cut calorie intake, thereby slowing the growing obesity epidemic and cutting down on the related increase in chronic conditions like heart disease and diabetes. To date, research indicates the menu labeling law has not had a huge impact on our behavior, but it does have the potential for good for those who use it. Decision-making around food choices is complex, says Jason Block, MD, an associate professor of population medicine at Harvard Medical School, who has conducted extensive research on the impact of menu labeling. We make our choices based on factors such as taste, convenience, and price, but calories and other nutrition information can be a useful additional piece of information when we're trying to decide between two or three items or debating if we want that drink or side. If it has been recommended you aim for a particular calorie range as part of a weight management strategy, menu labeling can help you to see where a meal fits into your calorie allotment for the day. But if your primary focus is health and wellness, calories are not the only factor to consider. For health in general, your overall dietary pattern is more important than calorie counting alone. Tufts research has shown that foods people eat at restaurants are, on average, much less healthy than foods consumed from grocery stores, work sites, or schools, says Dr. Darish Mazafarian, Dean of the Friedman School and Editor-in-Chief of the Tufts Health and Nutrition Letter. As long as that's true, focusing on lower calorie choices can be helpful, but it will only get you so far, health-wise. It is possible for healthier foods to have higher calories than less healthy foods. So here's a sidebar. Take charge. Try these tips when ordering restaurant food. Number one, compare calories in the foods you plan to order to your overall calorie needs for the day. 2,000 calories is a typical daily upper limit. Number two, look for healthy menu choices, such as those with more fruits, vegetables, beans, and whole grains, and less sodium, refined grains, and added sugars. Try seafood, not breaded and fried, over red meat, more often and look for healthy plant oils rather than butter. A salad with olive oil dressing is a healthier choice than a deli sandwich, regardless of calorie content. And number three, plan ahead. Complete nutrition and ingredient information beyond calorie content is available at company websites. Before ordering takeout or heading out to eat, use it to identify options lower in sodium, added sugars, or refined carbohydrates, for example, and higher in unsaturated fats, fiber, or vitamins and minerals. And moving on now to the next publication. This is Consumer Reports on Health. And the first article is Subtle Signs of Stroke. You may know the classic signs and symptoms of a stroke: the face drooping, arm or leg weakness, speech difficulties, impaired vision and dizziness, and loss of coordination. But there are other early warning signs that you probably don't associate with stroke, according to the American Heart Association. What early symptoms have in common is that they occur suddenly and often can't be explained by other possible causes. They include headaches, especially if they're unusually severe, difficulty walking, exhaustion or generalized weakness, fuzzy thinking or confusion, and nausea or vomiting or trouble swallowing, especially without an accompanying illness. If you experience a sudden occurrence of these symptoms without any other explanation, seek immediate medical care, especially if you fall into a high-risk category for stroke. This includes people with high blood pressure, the heart rhythm disorder, atrial fibrillation, diabetes, or heart disease, or a personal or family history of stroke. Additional high-risk groups include adults 55 or older, African Americans, and women taking estrogen-containing birth control pills or hormone therapy. Overall, men are more likely than women to have a stroke, but women are more likely to show more subtle signs and symptoms. Of course, it's possible that you're not having a stroke and it's a false alarm, but it's best to play it safe and get immediate evaluations. If it is a stroke, the longer it takes to receive care and treatment, the higher the risk of disability or death. Every minute counts in stemming irreversible brain injury. This next article is the four moves that you need to build muscle. These exercises, all modified for older adults, will help you get and stay strong. When you think of strength training, exercises such as squats, sit-ups, push-ups, and bench presses probably come to mind, and they are all effective. As you get older, though, you may shy away from these moves because of pain or other limitations, but avoiding them will only exacerbate the normal muscle loss that comes with age. Maintaining strength is essential for maintaining independence and mobility as you age, says Miriam Mori, Ph.D., co-director of the Older Americans Independence Center at Duke University School of Medicine in Durham, North Carolina. The prescription for doing that is easier than you may think. Mori recommends the four simple exercises below to hit all your major muscle groups. They're modifications of traditional exercises to make them more doable for adults at all levels and abilities, but they'll work just as well. Aim to do 10 to 12 reps of each, both sides, for the seated arm and leg lift, twice a week. That will take you just 10 minutes a week. You can expect to see results in about 2 weeks. So here's the first one. For arms and chest, the stronger your upper body is, the easier it will be to carry groceries and do chores such as laundry. So here's what to do. Try wall presses. Compared with push-ups, wall presses reduce the amount of body weight you're moving and ease pressure on shoulders and wrists. Stand slightly more than arm's length away from a wall. Lean forward. Place palms on the wall at chest height. Heels will be off the floor. Bend elbows and lower your chest, then straighten your arms. The next one is for legs and the glutes. You need lower body strength for getting into and out of the car, standing up from the couch, or climbing stairs. So here's what you can do. Try chair stands. Doing squats with your body weight supported during part of the exercise takes stress off the knees. Sit toward the edge of a chair, feet hip width apart. Lean slightly forward and press through the heels to stand. Then slowly sit down. To make it easier, place a cushion or folded blanket on the seat. The higher the seat, the less range of motion. And to strengthen your core, all movement originates from the core, so building back and abdominal muscles will help you power through your day. So here's what to do. Try seated arm and leg lift. If getting to the floor to do crunches or planks is difficult for you, this move is a good alternative for strengthening your abdominal and back muscles. Sit in a chair with feet flat on the floor and arms at your sides. Simultaneously raise right foot and left arm. Slowly lower and repeat with opposite arm and leg. And the last one is for your mid-back and shoulders. Targeting these areas help you stand taller and makes activities such as vacuuming and gardening much easier. And here's the exercise. Try seated rows. This seated version protects the lower back. Holding light dumbbells or soup cans, water bottles, or no weight at all, sit in a chair with arms at your sides extended. Lean forward as far as possible from the hips. Squeeze your shoulder blades, bend elbows, and pull hands toward your hips, elbows pointing behind you. Then slowly release. This next article is 7 Smart Takeout Tips. Take a break from cooking without sabotaging your diet. These days, you might be getting takeout meals or food deliveries more frequently than you used to, thanks to the COVID-19 pandemic. Although a homemade meal is usually the healthiest choice, ordering in can be helpful during stressful times or even when you just don't feel like cooking. Fortunately, with a few smart strategies, you can maintain healthy eating habits even when you're ordering a meal to go. And here's some tips that will help. Number 1, start with the right eatery. Consumer Reports recently rated 17 chain restaurants to see which ones made it easier to opt for a nutritious dish. We scored them on many factors, including whether the drink options were more or less sugary, the availability of whole grains, the variety of fruits and vegetables, the levels of sodium and saturated fat, and whether you could get healthier protein options like fish, legumes, nuts, and tofu. Chipotle, Chopped, Core Life Eatery, Panera Bread, and Sweetgreen were some of the highest scorers. You can find our full ratings at cr.org/fastfood. Number 2, keep an eye on calories. A dish's calorie count isn't the only measure of whether a meal is good for you, but it may be the only nutrition info you see. In those cases, use it as a guide. Consumer Reports testing has found that the counts are generally on target, so try to aim for less than 600 calories for your entire meal. An easy way to keep track is to use the chain's mobile ordering app. Many allow you to view how calorie counts for customizable dishes such as salads and sandwiches change when you add or subtract ingredients. Number 3, upgrade when you can. Opt for brown rice instead of white, or a whole grain bun or pasta if available. Add extra vegetables to a pizza or beans to a taco, burrito, or salad. Number 4, sip smartly. Adding a large soda to your order for just a dollar may seem like a good deal. Unfortunately, all those added sugars will undercut your goal of ordering in a healthier meal. It's wisest to skip drinking soda altogether. Better beverage options include water, unsweetened iced tea, or no sugar added seltzer if it's available. Number 5, rethink your sides. Just because your order comes with chips or onion rings by default doesn't mean they're your only option. Ask whether you can swap them for a salad, a vegetable, or fruit. If you're really craving a less healthy side, be extra savvy about your main dish. For instance, if you want the onion rings, have them with a grain bowl or a veggie wrap, not a bacon-topped cheeseburger. Number 6, incorporate home cooking. Have the main dish you've been craving, but prep your own accompaniments. For instance, get the pizza or chicken sandwich to lighten the cooking load one night, but skip drinks, fries, and extras. Instead, toss your own salad with whatever vegetables you have on hand. Serve your dish with raw sliced carrots, celery, and tomato, or heat up a frozen vegetable as a side. Feeling more ambitious? Roast some fresh cauliflower or carrots, or steam green beans or broccoli. And number 7, split a dish. Restaurant portions tend to be oversized, which can encourage you to overeat. To avoid this, plan from the outset to share one entree with a family member. Another option, when the food arrives, pack up half and put it in the fridge to save it for next day's lunch. And we have time for now some of the Ask the Experts, the questions sent in. The first one is, my spring pollen allergies are starting. What meds can help? Here's the answer. An over-the-counter steroid nasal spray that contains fluticasone or triamcinolone is a good option. It is safe for older adults, says Amy Taggart Blazik, PharmD, division head of geriatrics at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center School of Pharmacy. You can add a, quote, second-generation antihistamine, such as Allegra, Claritin, or Zyrtec, for a few days until the nasal spray starts working. Start with half the dose recommended on the label, says Dr. Blazik. I've had patients get sleepy using them. The next question. My fresh fruit often spoils before I eat it. Is dried or canned food healthy too? It can be. Canned, dried, or frozen all count toward the 1.5 cups a day for women ages 51 and older, and 2 cups a day for men ages 51 and older, recommended by the Department of Agriculture. Opt for canned fruit in water instead of syrup, and dried fruit without added sugars. Note, a half cup of dried fruits like raisins or prunes actually counts as 1 cup of fruit, says Angela Lamond, a registered dietitian and spokesman for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Leslie with Independent Living, and I hope you've enjoyed today's readings from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Able Living, followed by the Women's Hour at 11.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Aphasia Center of West Texas has scheduled a tribute to the legendary Queen and Freddie Mercury. Live and virtual options, May 7th. She's a killer. The Horseshoe Amphitheater, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Scholarship is available. To sponsor, make a reservation, or for more information, call 432-699-1261. Or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert. Call 432-699-1261 or visit www.aphasiawtx.org/concert.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Gym after COVID vaccine. Dear Dr. Roach, after my wife and I received both shots of the COVID-19 vaccine, can we resume our gym classes and return to restaurants? We are both in good health. She is 68 and I am 70. GG. Answer, not immediately. The vaccine is given in 2 doses, 3 or 4 weeks apart, and maximum protection isn't reached for 2 weeks or so after the second dose. Even then, the protection isn't perfect, 94 to 95%, according to the best studies for the currently available vaccines. Because there remains rampant transmission in all areas of the country, it is safest for you and your wife to continue to socially distance and wear masks. That's particularly important for people at a high risk of complications. Secondly, although the vaccine is excellent at reducing the risk of developing symptomatic COVID-19 infection, it isn't clear whether it stops asymptomatic infections. It is possible that vaccinated people may be temporarily infectious after being exposed without ever knowing they might be spreading the virus. Until it is known for sure that that is not the case, it is safer for others if you and your wife and all of us who have been vaccinated continue to wear masks and socially distance. It is disappointing that we cannot immediately return to our lives before the pandemic began, but the vaccine is only part of the solution. We cannot let up on the rest of the behaviors we need to continue to stop the pandemic.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 44 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the upper 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Able Living, and I'm your reader, Kevin, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Disability Scoop, and now I'll begin with Biden calls for major boost to disability services. This article written by Michelle Dement. Alongside funding for bridges and roads, President Joe Biden's wide-ranging $2 trillion infrastructure plan includes a massive investment in home and community-based services for people with disabilities. The proposal unveiled, known as the American Jobs Plan, calls for $400 billion in spending to expand access to Medicaid home and community-based services for those currently on waiting lists. These investments will help hundreds of thousands of Americans finally obtain the long-term services and support they need while creating new jobs and offering caregiving workers a long overdue raise, stronger benefits, and an opportunity to organize or join a union and collectively bargain, the White House said. The push to enhance offerings for individuals with disabilities is a part of a sweeping proposal to modernize America's infrastructure and put more people to work, in addition to projects focused on improving transportation and repairing schools and federal facilities. Biden is arguing that the nation must also invest in the caregiving system in this country. It's a once-in-a-generation investment in America, unlike anything we've seen or done since we built the interstate highway system and the space race decades ago, Biden said in a speech in Pittsburgh introducing the plan. Spending would occur largely over 8 years, Biden said, paid for through corporate tax increases. The American Jobs Plan will work in tandem with another proposal called the American Families Plan, which is expected in the coming weeks to boost the caregiving workforce and the people they serve, Biden indicated. The White House pointed to research suggesting that increasing pay for direct care staff leads to better quality care, greater productivity, fewer health violations, and helps prevent deaths. The focus on caregivers and improving access to home and community-based services makes good on promises Biden made during his campaign for the White House last year. And the plan's rollout comes just weeks after a group of federal lawmakers issued a draft proposal for a bill known as the HCBS Access Act. It's designed to eliminate waiting lists for home and community-based services, strengthen the network of providers, and bring other changes to the nation's disability services system. With this $400 billion in the American Jobs Plan, we can help people receive the care, comfort, and healing they deserve in their own homes, while building our nation's long-term care system back better than it ever was before. And then we can focus our efforts on the systemic reforms necessary for HCBS and long-term care under legislation like the HCBS Access Act, said U.S. Representative Debbie Dingell, Democrat of Michigan, one of the lawmakers behind the draft proposal. Beyond services for people with disabilities, Biden's American Jobs Plan would also expand access to competitive, integrated employment for people with disabilities and bar employers from paying people with disabilities what's known as sub-minimum wage, pay that is less than the federal minimum, the White House said. The ARC, a disability nonprofit that has long advocated for better access to home and community-based services, said it was encouraged by Biden's plan to improve access to services and supports provided by Medicaid. Peter Burns, the group's CEO, said he was pleased to see the value of people with disabilities, family caregivers, and direct support professionals recognized and upheld in the administration's Bold American Jobs Plan. The proposal is a welcome first step, Burns said. The next article by Bob Agelko of the San Francisco Chronicle, and it's entitled, Court, Service Dogs May Be Trained by Owners and Allowed into Shops and Restaurants. People with mental or physical disabilities can train their own dogs to aid them and accompany them into restaurants, shops, and hospitals without having to formally certify them as service animals, that is, a federal appeals court ruled recently. The service designation lets owners bring their dogs into businesses and other establishments that do not otherwise allow them, allowing owners to self-certify their pets after training and subject to reasonable limits, promotes the goal of the 1990 federal law banning discrimination against people with disabilities, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco said. The Americans with Disabilities Act was intended to promote independent living and economic self-sufficiency, as well as equal opportunity, Judge Ronald Gould said in the 3-0 ruling, which overturned a federal judge's decision. He said private dog registry organizations lack a uniform standard for certifying service animals, and requiring individuals with disabilities to seek such certification would make dog ownership more expensive and less accessible. The ruling is the first by an appellate court on the issue will aid many people with disabilities, said attorney Christopher Knopf of the Disability Rights Legal Center, who argued the case on behalf of an L.A. County woman suffering mental problems after years of physical and sexual abuse. People have the right to train their own service dogs. They have the right to train them properly, but they can do it themselves, Knopf said. He said a store can still exclude a dog that is not housebroken or under its owner's control. Raul Martinez, lawyer for a hospital that refused to allow the woman to bring her dog along while undergoing treatment, said the hospital can still try to convince a lower court judge that the animal was not a proper service dog and would interfere with the woman's therapy. The court said the woman, a trained speech-language pathologist identified as C.L., was abused by her family and later by a partner and was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress syndrome, severe anxiety, and other ailments that caused reoccurring nightmares, flashbacks, and suicidal impulses. A therapist recommended a service dog, but a trained dog cost $15,000, so instead she got an 8-week-old Bichon poodle named Aspen in 2013. She took training classes and taught Aspen to protect her in various ways, the court said, licking her face to wake her from nightmares, alerting her when others were approaching, even standing in front of a wall to prevent her from banging her head against the wall. But when she sought admission to Del Amo Treatment Center in Torrance, California, for treatment multiple times from 2015 through 2017, the hospital said Aspen did not qualify as a service dog. The federal judge agreed, but was overruled by the appeals court. A dog can be trained to aid a person with a disability without formal schooling, Gould said in the ruling. The court returned the case to the trial judge to reconsider whether Aspen could accompany CL to the hospital. Our next story, written by Katie Cameron, McClatchy, Washington Bureau is her news service. The title, People with IDD Can Get COVID-19 Vaccination Help from New Website. People with intellectual and developmental disabilities such as Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, and autism have faced significant hurdles during the pandemic involving education, employment, and mental and physical health. Despite little research on the group comprising about 6.5 million Americans, it's well known these individuals face significantly higher risks of coronavirus-related hospitalization and death, yet they've been mostly absent from many states' vaccination priority lists. To combat what experts deem a public health concern, the National Association of Councils on Developmental Disabilities launched a website to help guide people with IDD to trusted resources on COVID-19 vaccines, particularly where to find one in their area. Those behind Get Out the Vaccine said the community is dealing with transportation issues, internet access problems, and general struggles with following preventive measures such as social distancing and mask wearing, all factors that can keep them from getting a vaccine appointment. But Emmanuel Jenkins, who has cerebral palsy, says he won't let those challenges stand in the way. "If cerebral palsy is not going to take me out," he said, "I refuse to let a pandemic or a virus do the same." Donna Meltzer, CEO of NACDD, said her goal is to make sure people with disabilities can get back to living their fullest lives. "So many people have been isolated from their friends, families, co-workers, and their community because of this pandemic," Meltzer said in a statement. "We want our community to understand the benefits of the vaccine and feel empowered to make the decision to get vaccinated on their own." There is no national database that tracks how many people with IDD are getting vaccinated against COVID-19, but some states have their own counts and are taking steps to ensure this population receives priority across access while supplies remain limited. For example, Maryland and Ohio include people with developmental disabilities in their Phase 1B vaccine priority lists. Illinois included people with disabilities in its Phase 1B, and Nevada and Washington included the same group in Phase 1C, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. Still, the terminology used within state vaccination plans have left some people with attention deficit disorders, hearing loss, seizures, stuttering, or other developmental delays out from early vaccination guidelines. Most states say people with high-risk medical conditions should be prioritized, but the category may not include all people with IDD. Many, if not all, states also prioritize adults living in long-term care facilities per Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommendations. However, not all people with IDD live in nursing homes. The vague criteria for vaccination stems in part from a continued inattention to this population in research studies, four medical professionals wrote in commentary published in February in The Lancet. Specifically, national population health data for individuals with IDD is incomplete, and strategies to improve vaccination rates in individuals with IDD are underexplored. The CDC acknowledges that people with disabilities are at higher risk of getting COVID-19, but the only intellectual or developmental condition it lists on its website is Down syndrome. The agency notes conditions are added when there is enough scientific evidence to support putting them on the list. The list is updated as new information becomes available. What risks do people with IDD face when diagnosed with COVID-19? CDC officials say additional health conditions such as diabetes, heart disease, or obesity on top of a disability can raise risks of getting COVID-19. Part of the reason being that this group is more likely to have such pre-existing health conditions. In fact, life expectancy for this population is nearly 20 years below that of the general public. A study of more than 65 million patients across 547 healthcare organizations found that people with IDD were more likely to get COVID-19, be hospitalized, be admitted to intensive care unit, and die from COVID-19 compared to those infected with the virus but not with IDD. Another study of New York residents showed that risk of death for people with IDD and COVID-19 was nearly eight times higher than that of the general population. Yet another paper found that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities were more likely to become infected by and die from COVID-19, especially at younger ages, McClatchy News reported last June. This group has historically grappled with fragmented access to primary and preventative care, social and medical stigma, and marginalization, medical professionals wrote in The Lancet. These barriers contribute to higher prevalence of co-occurring mental and physical health conditions and rates of mortality, particularly for racial and ethnic minorities, women, and individuals from low-income families. Given these barriers and resulting health disparities, we can anticipate hurdles for vaccine dissemination and uptake among individuals with IDD, they added. Experts say the best defense against COVID-19 right now is vaccination. President Joe Biden announced all Americans will be eligible to get COVID-19 vaccines by May the 1st, although some states are opening up eligibility earlier. However, most advocates agree there is much to be done to ensure people with IDD have the resources they need to access accurate information about vaccines. The CDC offers resources about COVID-19 that are easy to read in American Sign Language and for people with limited English proficiency. So far, more than 56 million people have been fully vaccinated in the U.S. as of April 1, a CDC tracker shows. That's just about 17% of the population. Our next story, by Sean Heasley, entitled Amid Pandemic, Sesame Street Aims to Help Children with Autism Adapt. Sesame Street is turning its attention to helping kids with autism cope with change. The Venerable Children's Show is introducing a new episode and a slate of online videos and activities featuring Julia, a four-year-old Muppet with autism. The collection of materials is designed to address challenges that families face adjusting to changes in routine and uncertainty generally, something that has become all too familiar during the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. All children depend on consistent routines which help them feel safe and secure. Disruptions to routines can be challenging, especially for children with autism, said Jeanette Benicourt, Senior Vice President of the U.S. Social Impact at Sesame Workshop, which makes the show. The new resources feature Julia and her family using strategies to navigate everyday moments and life surprises. Together, we can help families manage the stress that comes along with the unexpected. In a series of online videos, Julia, along with her family and her Sesame Street friends, work through various obstacles, like a pizza that arrives with the wrong topping and a picnic that gets rained out. Similar themes are explored in an accompanying storybook and interactive game, and there are articles for parents with strategies to help children handle changes in routine. The latest materials are part of the Sesame Street and Autism See Amazing in All Children initiative, an online array of resources that originally debuted back in 2015. Julia will also appear in a new episode of Sesame Street called Match It, premiering April 8th on HBO Max and PBS Kids. Next article, written by Sean Heasley, entitled Trader Joe's Eyes Improved Shopping Experience for Those with Special Needs. Trader Joe's is looking to make it easier for people with autism and intellectual disabilities to shop its grocery stores. The company said that it has partnered with the life skills app Magnus Cards to feature five different card decks to guide shoppers through various aspects of a visit to Trader Joe's. The card decks include one focused on checking out your items, another about sensory experiences in the store, among others. Each provides visual cues, step-by-step instructions, and audio to walk users through tasks. Grocery stores can be challenging places for individuals with autism, but the basic necessity of buying food and putting the simple pleasure of selecting what you plan to eat is vital for all people. That according to Nadia Hamilton, who was inspired by her brother with autism to create Magnus Mode, which makes the free app. Trader Joe's Magnus Cards provide support for a critical skill set that everyone needs and a fun experience that everyone deserves. Trader Joe's is the first grocery store to partner with Magnus Cards. Kenya friend Daniel National, director of public relations at Trader Joe's, said the app bolsters the grocer's efforts to create an inclusive shopping experience. It's a tremendous opportunity to further support our customers and their caregivers, friend Daniel said. The Magnus Cards app is available in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. The Trader Joe's card decks are located in the app's shopping section. Next article, written by Michelle Diament, entitled Feds Ramping Up Vaccine Access for People with Disabilities. The Biden administration is putting big bucks behind an effort to get more people with disabilities vaccinated against COVID-19. As eligibility opens up to everyone nationwide, federal officials are acknowledging that challenges remain in reaching many people with disabilities who face transportation barriers, difficulty with scheduling appointments, or who might struggle to manage a visit to a mass vaccine site, among other issues. Now the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Administration for Community Living will provide nearly $100 million to improve access for people with disabilities and older adults. Most of the funds, almost $93 million, will go to aging and disability networks in every state and territory, including Centers for Independent Living, University Centers of Excellence in Developmental Disabilities Protection, and advocacy systems and state councils on developmental disabilities. The money will provide assistance with scheduling vaccine appointments, transportation to vaccine sites, pay for the direct support services needed for such appointments, and help connect people to in-home vaccine options, among other things, federal health officials said. The Biden administration is committed to expanding those access to vaccines, with a unique focus on ensuring those hit hardest by COVID-19 and at highest risk for severe illness or death get vaccinated, said Secretary of Health and Human Services Xavier Becerra. Through this unique, exciting new partnership between ACL and CDC, HHS will work alongside advocates to help older adults and people with disabilities get the services and assistance they need in order to get vaccinated and to have the security of knowing they are protected from COVID-19. Research shows that people with developmental disabilities face a much higher risk of dying from COVID-19 than others. With this in mind, advocates have pressed to secure priority access to vaccines for this population. Nonetheless, access for people with developmental disabilities has remained uneven, largely dependent on which state or locality an individual lives in and whether or not they reside in a congregate setting like an institution or a group home. To date, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that over 109 million Americans have received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine. Eligibility for the shots has been limited, but President Joe Biden now says the vaccine should be open for everyone 18 and older nationwide by April 19th. Our next article is written by Harris Meyer of the Kaiser Health News, and the title is Kids on Medicaid Seek Easier Access to Out-of-State Hospitals. 3-year-old Elizabeth Zutansky was born with a rare genetic condition that causes multiple seizures. Her neurologist, a top expert on treating her condition, practices at Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, less than an hour's drive from Zutansky's home in Hobart, Indiana. Her parents would like her to get all her care there. But Lurie wouldn't continue to treat Elizabeth because her insurer, Indiana Medicaid, pays out-of-state providers much less than in-state facilities. That's true for most state Medicaid programs. So the Zutanskys pay Lurie neurologist out of pocket for consultations, and the doctor gives detailed instructions for Elizabeth's care to their local pediatrician. Elizabeth suffers uncontrolled seizures, however, she needs quick interventions. Her parents have to pull their two teenagers out of school, and the whole family drives 2.5 hours to Riley Hospital for Children in Indianapolis, the state's only specialized pediatric facility. If she has to be admitted, the family sometimes must leave there to return to their jobs and school. It's terrible to leave your daughter and drive home so far away, said Laura Zukatansky, Elizabeth's mother. You aren't there to comfort her. One seizure could kill her. How would you feel about that if you weren't there? Making top quality care accessible at out-of-state children's hospitals for kids with complex medical needs has long vexed families, providers, and Medicaid programs. The choice of an out-of-state hospital can be a matter of convenience for patients and their families, and it may also mean ensuring state-of-the-art care, since only a limited number of hospitals and physicians in the country have the skills and experience to best treat children with certain conditions. Congress has recognized the problem. 2 years ago, it passed a law allowing states to voluntarily establish a health home program, potentially make it easier for out-of-state providers to serve as the coordinating caregiver for children with complex conditions. Participating states would receive a temporary boost in federal Medicaid funding to launch the program. But the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services says it has no definitive timeline for issuing guidance to the states on how to set this up. State Medicaid officials argue that their states can't afford to send children to out-of-state facilities that demand higher payment rates. Children's hospitals say all they want is rates equal to what Medicaid pays in-state providers. Complicating matters is that most states have private Medicaid-managed care plans running their programs, and those plans decide which providers patients can go to and how much to pay them. But Indiana lawmakers are moving on bills that will boost Medicaid payments to children's hospitals in bordering states, Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, and Ohio, to near parity with in-state facilities. Currently, a facility in Chicago might receive reimbursement as low as 1/4 of what an Indiana hospital would get for the same services. Both the House of Representatives and the Senate passed versions of the bill, and they're expected to reconcile the differences and send it to the governor. The projected annual cost to the state is $300,000 to $950,000. To address fears that it may cost more, the bill would have to be reauthorized in 2 years. These families have to schlep down 3 hours in the snow to Indianapolis, and if they try to reschedule an appointment, they may have to wait another 6 weeks to get in, said State Republican Senator Mike Boachek, one of the bill's lead sponsors. He faced that situation with his own daughter, who was born in 2001 with Down syndrome in critical condition. We can do better. Nearly 90% of children's hospitals serve out-of-state patients, receiving payments from more than six states on average, according to a Federal Medicaid Commission report last year. 2/3 of the states pay out-of-state hospitals a lower rate than in-state facilities. Kids with complex medical conditions account for 40% of Medicaid spending on pediatric care. Children's hospitals getting approved for Medicaid agencies and managed care plans to treat out-of-state children and negotiating payment often takes more time than delivering the care. They have to arrange individualized case agreements for each patient. Dr. John Cunningham, physician in chief at Comer Children's Hospital in Chicago, said hospital staff members recently removed a brain tumor in a child from Northwestern Indiana, but Medicaid refused a payment deal that would have enabled Comer to continue treating the patient, forcing the family to go to Indianapolis for follow-up care. The transfer was not because of the care, it was because of an artificial boundary called a state line, said Cunningham, whose hospital is treating 275 kids from Northwestern Indiana and has hired a lobbyist to push the Indiana bill. That's a fundamental problem. But Medicaid officials say that sending kids to out-of-state facilities can be too costly, and that interstate travel may not be best for the family. When a children's hospital prides itself on being the top pediatric center for different conditions. It knows people will come and it doesn't have to negotiate, said Matt Sallow, executive director of the National Association of Medicaid Directors. It's take it or leave it, and that's not fair. Some state and children's hospitals have been able to work out border deals. The Illinois Medicaid program, for instance, has arranged to pay St. Louis Children's Hospital in-state rates for serving children in the East St. Louis, Illinois area. In contrast, Children's Hospital of Philadelphia leaders say their facility often treats children who live just across the Delaware River, New Jersey, for much lower rates than New Jersey's Medicaid program pays the more distant in-state children's hospital, or without getting paid at all. Well, it is all the time we have for today. This has been Kevin with Able Living. Hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, the Center Solutions Podcast, followed by the Noon Book Hour at 12.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Humane Society of Odessa, 7012 Mockingbird Lane, is offering curbside adoptions, vaccines, warmer, and more. Shelter hours are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Only one person is allowed in the office and kennels at this time. For applications, vaccine, or additional information, call 381-5503 or 257-4311 or email shelter@odessahumanesociety.org. To see current pets available or to private message the shelter, visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa.
This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, we continue our series of Oscar-winning films. For the last several weeks, we've selected one audio-described movie from each decade leading up to this year's Academy Awards broadcast on April 25th. Saturday, we present the 2012 film awarded Best Picture, Argo. This historical drama was directed by, produced by, and starred Ben Affleck. It also starred Bryan Cranston, Alan Arkin, and John Goodman. In addition to Best Picture, it also earned Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Film Editing honors. In all, Argo received 7 Academy Award nominations.
Actions of Iran have shocked the civilized world.
Go! Shut everything!
Our embassy has been seized and more than 60 American citizens continue to be held as hostages.
If we're going to go, then we need to go now.
What happened?
6 of the hostages went out a back exit.
Where are they?
The Canadian ambassador's house.
We've got Revolutionary Guards going door to door. These people die. They die badly.
White House?
Who wants the 6 of them out?
What we like for this are bicycles.
Deliver the 6 bikes, provide them with maps.
Or you could just send in training wheels and meet them at the border with Gatorade.
It's gonna take a miracle to get them out.
Fighting man. What are we watching?
I got an idea.
They're a Canadian film crew for a science fiction movie.
I fly into Tehran. We all fly out together as a film crew.
I need you to help me make a fake movie.
So you want to come to Hollywood and act like a big shot without actually doing anything?
Yeah.
You'll fit right in. You need a script?
Argo. Science, fantasy, adventure. Moonscape, Mars, desert. You need an exotic location to shoot.
You need a producer.
If I'm doing a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir. By far. You have 72 hours to get them out.
They're getting a visitor.
Have you gotten people out this way before?
No. You're asking us to trust you with our lives.
This is what I do, and I've never left anyone behind.
They know who they are, and they know they're hiding out.
It's over, Tony.
If they stay here, they will be taken. Probably not alive.
We're responsible for these people.
I'm responsible.
really believe your little story is going to make a difference when there's a gun to our heads?
I think my little story is the only thing between you and a gun to your head.
The 2012 winner for Best Picture, Argo. Audio described. Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
Attitude toward fighting bladder cancer. To your good health for Thursday. Dr. Roach writes, a recent column from a writer, LLB, with an inability to urinate despite a large amount of urine in the bladder, led me to suggest additional testing to find the underlying cause. He wrote back and unfortunately was found to have bladder cancer. He has gotten some radiation treatment and may get chemo as well. He said, if I do go down, I will go down fighting. I admire his attitude and wish him the best in fighting bladder cancer.